This is Weekends on All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Jackie Leiden. For over half a century, the Washington Post has been one of America's preeminent broadsheets, covering the power and politics of the nation's capital. It's won Pulitzers and attracted readers, and of course, woven itself into American history and culture with the Watergate scandal.
Look, there are over 2,000 reporters in this town. Are there five on Watergate? Where did the Washington Post suddenly get the monopoly on wisdom?
The legendary editor, Ben Bradlee, and the reporting of Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein was popularized in the 1976 movie All the President's Men. The paper brought down a president, Richard Nixon. But times change. News has migrated from the page to computer screens to mobile phones, and the Washington Post isn't immune. This week, Amazon founder Jeff Bezos bought the paper for $250 million, and eight decades of Graham family ownership came to an end. More change is ahead for everyone in the news business, from broadsheets to broadband and beyond. That's our cover story today, news we can use in the digital age.
I don't really think it's a question of replacing newspapers. I think it's a convergence.
That's Arianna Huffington, founder of the Huffington Post. We'll hear more from her later. Journalism looks different than it did 20 years ago, and it's not as if the Washington Post didn't see it coming. In 1992, Robert Kaiser was the managing editor of the paper. He was dispatched to a conference hosted by Apple in Japan on the intersection of technology and the news. On the way home, he wrote a letter to the Post leadership.
I wrote this memo by hand on a yellow pad in the airplane. On the fanciest plane ride I've ever had in my life, the Washington Post was richer then. They could put the managing editor in first.
Kaiser proposed two concrete strategies going forward for a new digital Washington Post.
We should create the first electronic newspaper. The second proposal was to put all Post classified ads online.
And the Post did just that. It created an online version of itself, but it just wasn't savvy enough.
We could have been Monster. We could have been Craigslist. We could have done all that stuff if we had been adventurous. But let me say, I get nervous when people tell me how prescient this was, and if only we'd listened to what Kaiser wrote and stuff like that. That might literally be true in some way, but the fact is, because we were so big, so fat, and so happy, and because everything seemed to be going our way, we were just in no frame of mind to take the big adventurous steps that would have been required to really try to become pioneers in this realm.
Instead, Craigslist took a huge bite out of ad revenues and thus profits. And so, too, did new digitally nimble news sources like the Huffington Post. In 2005, Arianna Huffington upended the traditional news model with something called aggregation. The Huffington Post collected stories and links from all corners of the web and put it on its own front page.
There was a real opportunity to bring together four different elements: blogging, which at the time, you may remember, was kind of dismissed as something that people who had no jobs were doing in their pajamas in their parents' basements. Elevate blogging, then combine it with curation, which really basically means aggregation, but with a certain attitude and with the emphasis being on bringing together the best of the web on any subject. Commenting, a lot of engagement. Engagement was always at the heart of everything at the Huffington Post, you know, so that it wasn't just us talking to our readers, but listening to them. And our comments were from the beginning pre-moderated, so we could have a civil environment. And then gradually, as we started being more profitable and bringing in more investment, original reporting. So these were sort of the four elements that we started with, and that we kept growing as HuffPost became bigger and we were able to have more resources.
The approach was pilloried by old media, dismissed as a lightweight mashup.
I think there were definitely many more naysayers than people who thought it would work. I remember one of our first reviews, I've kind of learned it by heart, on our first day in the LA Weekly said, "The Huffington Post is an unsurvivable failure. It is the movie equivalent of Gigli, Heaven's Gate, and Ishtar all rolled into one."
Another major objection to aggregating: papers thought their work, content they'd paid writers and editors to produce, was being hawked for free.
Aggregating if done right, and we have constant trainings for our editors, if done within the fair use guidelines, is of tremendous benefit to the creators of the content, because it brings them many more eyeballs, a lot more traffic, which they can monetize. We get literally hundreds of requests every day from newspapers and magazines to link to their story. So linking is really part of the internet economy. But I think we've moved beyond those early days in terms of our understanding of platforms.
Now everyone, including the Washington Post, aggregates. But after just 8 short years, that model may already be an outdated one. Along came BuzzFeed with a whole new model.
We're all about sharing all different kinds of content, whether that's lighthearted, social, emotional content, breaking scoops and news reporting, or branded content. Those are really the three categories of things that we do. And you know, we view ourselves as a media company that's really social from the ground up.
John Steinberg is the president of BuzzFeed. You might have seen BuzzFeed's top 10 lists, and that's exactly the point.
Everything we write has to be shareable. It has to be something that someone would want to pass along to another person. And we think that's a really high bar. As opposed to writing for a search engine or writing for a robot of some kind, the content has to be compelling and novel and interesting enough that a person is willing to pass it along to another person.
BuzzFeed was developed by 6 people in a room in Chinatown in Manhattan. Its founder, Jonah Peretti, was actually working for the Huffington Post at the time. Back to John Steinberg.
Jonah had this vision that, having been a founder of the Huffington Post, that the next big thing would be social. And much like Huffington Post arose during an era of search engines and Google being the dominant place people went to for news, that Facebook and like social platforms would evolve. I don't think we'd be where we are today were it not for Facebook and Twitter stumble upon and I think soon emerging platforms like Snapchat and WhatsApp and things like that, because that for us is the cable system of our era. You know, for us, these social platforms are the new cable system, and what we're seeing play out now is much like what we saw play out with television programming during the 80s.
Now, BuzzFeed has a staff of 300 people. 100 of them are reporters.
We've approached it from the bottom up. We started out as a toy, as something that was lightweight. And then as we saw more and more of an audience coming to us, we decided to move upstream because we saw so much of an opportunity for young people. Young people really have no media that is their own. You know, arts and leisure sections and real estate sections talking about expensive things doesn't really appeal to a younger generation, whereas memes and web culture is their culture. It's their rock music as opposed to the disco music from a prior generation. And so with that audience and having started out with the light entertainment stuff, we felt that we could be the place that they come to for their hard-hitting news and reporting. And you know, our front page traffic has grown substantially, pointing to the fact that now people come to us during a moment of world affairs.
Have you done demographic research on BuzzFeed?
60% of our audience is 18 to 34. That's perhaps the most pronounced demographic differentiation. When you look at television viewing audiences now, the average network television viewer is late 40s or 50s. You know, New York Times had an article on Monday about Fox News' median viewer being 65 years old. So our audience is inordinately young compared to newspaper or television.
But they don't have to pay a subscription fee, do they? They don't have to buy it the way that they would the New York Times or the Washington Post, or for that matter, contribute to a local public radio station if their conscience is to be absolved.
We just find that the economics of the web allow us to thrive with a new kind of advertising model and not be reliant on paywalls or subscriptions. We want the biggest possible audience.
So I'd like to ask, when you tell stories, are you determining things editorially or based on algorithms and searches? How do you identify?
Our organization under Ben Smith, our editor-in-chief, works like a traditional news organization in that reporters go after stories that they're interested in and are assigned by their editors. What's different is we have a training program that's all around writing for the social web, and we have a publishing system, a content management system, which is very different, that allows people to dynamically pull in and put together content. They publish what they want to write, and everything or most things hit some area of the site, whether that's the front page or a section. And then pieces only stay live and only continue to be promoted if they're being shared. And if they're not being shared, they either roll off the front page or roll off the section header, and they're there, but they don't get promoted. We don't give additional fuel to things that are not being shared.
From paper and ink to printing presses, broadsheets to broadband, search engines to social media, change is the new normal. Steinberg thinks that the Washington Post is positioned once again to innovate.
I think that it gives them really a shot now to reinvent themselves. And a lot of the things that I think about in terms of train tracks and distribution, Jeff Bezos and Amazon have some of the best. I mean, the Kindle platform is just one of the most powerful reading platforms in the world right now. And the fact that the Washington Post will theoretically have access to that in some way, blows my mind.
As for the rest of us, stay tuned. Coming up, President Obama in a press conference yesterday said the Al-Qaeda of 9/11 has been broken up, but the terror network is still finding new recruits and working in many different parts of the world.
Although they are less likely to be able to carry out spectacular homeland attacks like 9/11, they have the capacity to go after our embassies. They have the capacity, potentially, to go after our businesses. They have the capacity to be destabilizing and disruptive in countries where the security apparatus is weak.
Also this hour, a conversation with a former ambassador about the complicated and dangerous work that diplomats are asked to do. That's coming up on Weekends on All Things Considered from NPR News.